it probably seems a little bit odd that on Mothering Sunday we're talking about fathers. It's just the Church of England's lectionary. Kind of, it's the wonders of the Church of England. Who can possibly understand or fathom the depths of its logic or any of those things? I'm also very aware that not only is it kind of about fathers, it's just the most incredibly familiar passage. It doesn't get much more familiar than that. And I'm also aware that I've probably spoken on it quite a lot of times. And for me, how I kind of see this passage has been forever shaped by reading Omri Nguyen's book on the return of the prodigal. And although I'm not going to be kind of quoting this word for word tonight, I know that in what I say to you, I am really influenced by kind of Omri Nguyen's kind of exploration, kind of through the picture that we have there, which you probably can't see and probably have looked at and not really taken in what it's all about. But it's Rembrandt's rendition of The Return of the Prodigal. And kind of Nguyen uses that to kind of unpack this story and make sense of his own spiritual journey. And in a way, I'm talking about kind of all of our spiritual journeys tonight, kind of in the light of this passage. Just before I go on, those of you that are familiar with that picture, and you won't see it just by sort of looking across the room in the dark, can anyone tell me what's wrong with it? There's a few art experts in the room. Anyone know what's wrong with it? You probably... let me describe it to you. You've got this kind of contrite young man in most dirty robes kneeling at the feet of this really old, elderly man, which is kind of regarded as a bit of a self-portrait by Rembrandt. This is the stage of life he is. You have some figures in the dark, but this rather austere guy standing at the side, which everyone assumes is the older brother. So kind of that's kind of what's wrong with that picture? Where's the inaccuracy? That's right. Liz knows her Bible. Thank you. No, that's right. Because you never see that image in the actual parable. Yeah, in the parable, when the younger son comes and kneels at the father's feet, the older son is out in the fields getting on with his work. He's not there. He comes in and interrupts the party later on. But kind of, although it's not as it is, it does feel like kind of Rembrandt captures the essence of the story, kind of the contriteness, the brokenness of the younger son, the love of the father, and this kind of austere older brother looking down. So I've kind of called this a lost son and a faithful father. We could also say, and a rather grumpy older brother, or older sister, for those of you, if that helps you kind of relate to it. Just looking around at any older sisters in the room. Is she a grumpy older sister? Sorry. The danger of 7 o'clock is it's all kind of intimate and we can ask these questions and say things that really we shouldn't say. Never mind. This is one of three parables that Jesus tells in response to the criticism of the Pharisees. And they are criticizing Jesus for the company that he keeps. Kind of that phrase in the opening snippet that Katie read for us. This man welcomes sinners and eats with them. And the eating with them is a big deal, because you don't associate with people that kind of don't keep the law, that are unclean because of it. You keep yourself separate from people that don't live as God would want them to. Or that was kind of what the Pharisees thought. And eating with someone is a sign of acceptance. So welcoming them and eating with them was Jesus accepting them. And in the minds of the Pharisees, accepting them as they are. Kind of all these three stories share a common conclusion. You know, there's the lost sheep, there's the lost coin, and now the lost son. They all end in kind of rejoicing at that which is lost being found. But the lost son, I think, is a little bit more nuanced. I know that the Bible has a lot to say about us being like sheep. It talks about us being like sheep that have gone astray. Kind of, it's generally seen as a kind of a picture of willfulness. But there's no sense that, you know, the sheep that's lost has kind of been willful. It's just got itself lost, you know, and yet the shepherd hunts it down and finds it. You know, a coin is an inanimate object that's been lost. But the difference here with the story of the son is that it's more complicated. He's made choices and he's had to live with the consequences of those choices. And yet there's still room for him to return and to be found. So I just kind of want to kind of take us through the characters in this story. And we begin in the obvious place at the beginning with the younger son. And I suspect that many of us, one time or another, have identified with the younger son. It seems to me, though, that there are lessons to learn from all of kind of the characters in this story. And one of the things about Nguyen is he sees himself in all of these characters. He sees himself in his youth as the rebellious young man. He becomes a Catholic priest. He sees himself as being a little bit like the Pharisees, a little bit like the old brother in being judgmental over others. But also he comes to see that what God really wants is for him to be like the Father. And it seems to me, potentially, that's a journey that many of us walk. Kind of before we go know God, there's often rebellion and rejection in our hearts. Kind of when we get to know God, kind of we can become religious. But actually, that's not where God wants us to stop. He wants us to share his heart about other people, about people that are broken. So kind of let's start with the younger son. His request is unusual. Inheritances could be divided up, but it would be unusual for a parent to pass on their wealth by way of inheritance in those times while they were still alive. Of course, now it's become commonplace, isn't it? It's called inheritance planning. It's all done to avoid inheritance tax if people have lots of money. Most of us don't have that much money, so it's totally irrelevant. But kind of people now try to pass on stuff to their children in advance. But this would have been unusual. It's not a normal request. And it's a request with a real edge to it. Yes, it's about him wanting to have his freedom and wanting to have the money. But it's more than that. It's a rejection of the father. It's a rejection of his home and his family and saying, I don't want you. Nguyen traveled a lot as a kind of Catholic priest and a counselor. And he talked about going to many different cultures around the world. And one of the questions he would often ask them was for their cultural interpretation of what is going on, in this kind of parable. And he said, if you go to an African village and you say, you know, this is what happens and you tell the story, you know, what would that mean in your culture? And actually, it's unthinkable in almost every culture around the world. Some of them would even go as far as it's like saying to the father, I want you to be dead to want to have your inheritance in that way. It's a complete rejection of the father. He gathers up his newly acquired inheritance. He goes his own way. We're not really given details. We're told that he squanders it on wild living. The older brother has some pretty clear opinions about kind of what that meant. But actually, as he hasn't seen his brother for however many years, it's probably more about his kind of his thoughts about it. You know, we're not told. But the reality is that the young man finds himself desperate and destitute. And I guess kind of the young man in this story becomes a metaphor for all of us, for what it means to turn our back on God. For all of us to make when we make a choice to kind of live our life the way we want, kind of in the opposition to the way that God wants us to live our lives. A lot of us can relate to trying to run away from God, kind of, you know, not wanting God to be part of our lives. Who was here this morning? Wasn't that video clip in Em's talk amazing? The young man. The guy from the gun culture. I just thought it was brilliant. It was brilliant because the story had a good ending, but what I thought was fascinating about it was where it began. And just for those of you that weren't there, it was a video clip of a young man who had got caught up in gang culture telling his story. And it kind of begins with what it was like in that gun culture. Someone that would have routinely carried a knife, would not, you know, would have been involved in violence towards others, you know, had kind of got into a bigger mess as you could possibly get into. And it ends with him realizing what a mess he's in, and going into a church and asking for God's help and saying to God, if you're real, would you reveal yourself to me? And you kind of go, oops, when you someone prays that sort of prayer, what if nothing happens? But actually the reality was that he experienced God's presence in some way that convinced him of the reality of that, and gave him the power to change his life. And now kind of he's gone from being in gang culture to helping those that are in it get out of it. He's completely turned his life around. And that's just the most amazing story. But what I found interesting was where it began. Because you would kind of think it begins with a broken home and a damaged background. And actually the upbringing he described was growing up in a family home with both parents where he felt loved by them. And there was the implication that there was faith in that family. And it's like he completely rejected that. It's almost like he couldn't accept that he was loved in that sort of way. He talked about the way he identified in the gang culture as being because basically he saw no worth in himself. He was worthless, and therefore he would be involved in the most worthless things. And for him, that was gang culture. And yet he came from a place where he was loved. And isn't that like this story we're reading here? You know, this son grows up in a home where his father loves him. I can imagine the older brother was prickly as a child, but his father loved him. And yet he still chooses to turn his back on that. And you know that, you know, our rejection of God may not be as obvious as that young man from gang cultures or this one here, but it can never really be less the same. We can know we're loved by God, but we cannot accept it, and we can choose to find fulfillment in almost any other way and find that it leads to emptiness. So this is a metaphor for kind of running away from God, and kind of how there actually isn't an answer in that. It's hard to imagine hitting rock bottom any more than this young man does. He finds himself alone, having to do menial work to survive. Looking after pigs is about as far as a good Jewish boy could possibly fall, because they, you know, pigs are unclean animals. To be working with unclean animals is about the lowest and most degrading thing he could possibly do. To be reduced to actually eating the food the pigs are meant to eat probably takes it to its ultimate extreme. And it's at that point he starts to recognize that he was better off at home. And his reaction, I think, opens a window on human nature. He's ashamed of what he's become. He's desperate. And out of his desperation, he decides to go home. But there is no expectation of a warm welcome. I hope you agree with me in that. I remember a long time ago being a curate in London and telling this story to a youth group and saying, what do you think about the young man and, you know, and what he expects when he goes home? And one of the brighter girls in the youth group turning around saying, nah, he knew his father was going to forgive him, you know. And there, yeah, and sometimes we kind of, yeah, with our parents, my kids probably know. My daughter knows she can wrap me around her little finger kind of anytime she likes, really. But I don't think there's any expectation here that he believes he's going to be accepted. And I'll tell you why I think that's the case. You see, I don't think he believes that his father's going to accept him, because I think on the whole he can't accept himself. It's that looking for kind of meaning that he's sought, that he's not found. It comes out of that need because he just doesn't feel good enough. He's trying to prove himself and it doesn't work. And going back, you know, he knows what a mess he's made of his life. And it's almost harder for him to get over how he feels about himself than how he believes his father will feel about him. And it seems to me that that is a window on the human condition, isn't it? You know, isn't the issue for most of us, or many of us, don't let me put my kind of inadequacies on you, that actually we're the ones that see beyond the kind of the thing we're presented when we look in the mirror. We're the ones that know what we're really like on the inside. And frequently we don't really like ourselves very much. And because we don't like ourselves, we find it very hard that God could possibly like us. And it means that we hold back. Or we kind of hatch up the sort of prayers that this young man hatches up. You know, if I can come home, I'll just kind of work as a servant. It's better to be a servant in your house. That's kind of all I really deserve. And that's often kind of how we feel. And we'll see more of that when we look at the older son in a minute. And yet this man is welcomed home in the warmest of terms. The father is looking for him. He isn't treated as a servant. He's restored to his previous position. Listen to this phrase. He is given riches that are not rightfully his. He's had his inheritance and he's spent it. Yet he's dressed in a fine robe. A ring is put on his finger. He's given an honoured position in the household. He received riches that he doesn't deserve. Does that kind of ring any bells for you, for me? He's restored to his previous position. But as we know, everything in the garden isn't rosy. There's also an older brother. And it seems to me that kind of the older brother mirrors the attitude of the Pharisees. You know, the people that are tutting at the people that are coming to Jesus. Because, you know, they don't approve of these kind of broken, messy, kind of wrong-living people being anywhere near a rabbi or a teacher. It's unthinkable to them. And the old brother isn't there, unlike Rembrandt's picture, when he comes home. He comes in to find this party going on, and he's filled with fury. And for me, there's a warning in this. And it's for us, because basically, wherever we've been, we're kind of now the religious. We're sitting in church. We're doing kind of God stuff. There's a warning for us about our attitude to others. And it's also a warning that I think sheds a window still on how we see ourselves. I find it fascinating that Nguyen recognises himself in his youth, kind of in his days of being, he came from a privileged background. He kind of did the prodigal thing. He went out and sold his, what's the phrase they used to use? Sowed your wild oats? Is that the phrase people used to use? You know, he kind of did all that stuff. He recognises himself in that. But he goes on to become a Catholic priest and a counsellor. And he recognises in the person that he becomes that actually gradually he becomes more like the Pharisee. You know, and I think particularly for those of us that call ourselves evangelicals, the danger of Phariseeism is huge. Pharisees are concerned with keeping the law and doing the right thing. For people that believe in the scriptures as God's authority, that can kind of become an overriding thing that drives us. And we can become like this older brother if we're not careful. The older brother reminds us that you actually don't have to leave home to end up lost. He's never left home. He's served faithfully in his father's house. But his response reveals that he's missed the point. All these years, he says, I've been slaving for you, and I've never disobeyed your order. You see, God is looking for sons and for daughters, not for servants and for slaves. And yet, even kind of, you know, for those of us that are part of the family, kind of, you know, we can still have that same thing you kind of see there in the younger son, but it takes a different form in the older one. This sense of not being good enough, of having to try and do things to please God and to gain God's acceptance, and losing the sight about the fact that God just loves us for who we are. And no matter what we do or don't do, he couldn't love us anymore because we're precious to him. And it's like the older brother has missed the point. This parable is all about grace. Does the younger son deserve forgiveness? Well, actually, probably he doesn't deserve it, no. Yet it's freely given. And the older son is offended by the father's generosity. And there are times when our lives are like that of the younger son, when we can kind of turn our back on God and willfully walk away, and yet God's arms are always open to receive us. But there are also times when we can become like the older one. And most of us are on a journey. We begin like the younger one. We can become like the older one. But actually what God really wants for us is for us to become like the Father. And that's the realization that Omri Nguyen kind of finds as he looks at Rembrandt, this older man, looks at this painting, and uses it as a prism to make sense of this parable and this story. And I just love the picture of the father. Because it's almost a cartoon picture, isn't it? It's a larger than life picture. You know, the son is making his way home, kind of with his head bowed, full of shame, and broken at the mess he's made of his life. And he's wondering what the reception is going to be. And he's got all of his kind of words of apology lined up. And he's hoping that he can just be a servant in the father's household. And yet the father has never stopped looking for the son. Every day he's looking down the road, longing and hoping for the son to come home. And he doesn't wait for the son to get there and get through this speech. When he sees the son coming down the road, he's running down the road. And there are two things that are totally biblically wrong about this parable. The first one I've mentioned already, and that's the idea that you would give someone your inheritance in that culture, in that way. It just didn't happen. You know, it's an outlandish thing. But the other thing that old men don't do in the scriptures. You know, these are people that are venerated. They are kind of respected for their age and their wisdom. They are the elders of their community, not just in terms of age, but in terms of their place of authority. What they don't do is grab up their robes around them and run down the road when they see their wayward son coming home. Kind of, it's an outrage. It's, you know, it's not just a, isn't it good that the father's pleased to see the son type of thing? It's a, this is how God feels about people that are broken when they come back to him. It's kind of, it's a totally over the top picture. I don't think I've got words to describe it. And I love it. He runs to the son and he wraps him in his arms. And the son's got all of the words of apology. He's got all the lines, but none of them matter. The father restores the son to the place that he's lost. And that's what he wants to do in people's lives. That's what he wants to do in our lives. You know, if we've turned our back on him, that's what he, you know, we can't turn our back on him. There's no too many times of turning our back on God for him not to be able to work, not to want to welcome us back. But what you also see here is that actually the father has love for both of the sons. You know, and if we've never done the running away and the rebelling thing, if we've done our best to live this kind of good, quiet, respectable, proper, godly Christian life, you know, but we've done it because we don't feel worthy and because that's what we feel we need to do to earn God's favour. Well, actually, you don't. He just loves you for who you are. You're just as precious to him. He loves both of his sons. His reply to the older son is just profound. Everything that I have is yours. You don't have to earn it. You don't have to act like a slave. You're my son. You know, it's all yours. It's all yours. And what does God want us to be like? Why does Jesus tell this story? He tells it to show us what the Father's heart is like, about how the Father feels about those people that Jesus is spending time with and eating with. This is how God feels about them. And that's therefore why Jesus spends time with them. And so who should we identify out of in this story? Who should we aspire to be like in this story? Surely it's the Father that we should aspire to be like. That we who have received forgiveness and acceptance and grace should become those who offer it to others. And at that point, I'm going to shut up and Katie can be relieved. Or not. It didn't quite come up. When I did this at 5, I did this kind of ad lib where I ended up going somewhere in my notes that I never really saw coming. Well, it wasn't in my notes. As I was talking about the unconditional love of God and the way that the ones that have kind of rejected everything that's good about home are welcome back, I found myself thinking a question and then asking the congregation that question. And somehow it didn't come out in the same way as I was going through this, but I'm not going to let you off the hook with this one. I just found myself asking questions about how we respond to people that want to come home in the light of this passage. You know, who do we welcome home in the light of this passage? Is it the young boy that's in gang culture that finds God and turns back to his family and church and is welcome back? Is it the teenagers that used to be part of the youth group at church and have gotten a bit of a pickle but want to come back? Are those the people we should be welcoming? Well, here's another question. What about the people that went to Syria to fight with ISIS? Should we be welcoming them back? What does this passage say about that? And I'll shut up.